I thank you for the honor and opportunity to be able to speak to you all today here about Sri Bhagavad Gita. I was thinking to read from this verse in Bhagavad Gita. I'll read it in Sanskrit. Udared atmanatmanam natmanam avasadayet atmaiva hyatmano bandhur atmaiva rupa atmanaha. Anybody know what this verse means? Well, it's interesting. I was just looking at this verse. It has 12 words. 7 of them are atma. That's like 80% of all the words in this verse are the same word. What can it possibly mean? Yes, yes. Okay, so let's ask a question. What does the word atma mean? What's that?
Soul.
Anybody disagree? Mind. What else? Self. Actually, Prabhupada says it can mean body, mind, or the soul. So you've got a very versatile word here. Atma can mean the body, the mind, or the soul. So let's look at this. Udaret, one must deliver, atmana, by the mind, atmanam, the conditioned soul, na, never, atmanam, the conditioned soul, avasadayet, put into degradation, atma, mind, certainly, he, indeed, atmana, of the conditioned soul, bandhu, friend, atma, again, mind, eva, certainly, ripu, enemy, atmanaha, of the conditioned soul. So there we have two uses of the word atma, conditioned soul and mind. We don't see it being used as body, but Prabhupada says in first line of the purport, the word atma denotes body, mind, and soul, depending on different circumstances. So this is something I think a lot of times devotees don't recognize. There's a general tendency to think that every Sanskrit word has one and only one meaning, like some kind of chemical that we have named somewhere in the chemistry lab or biology lab. It can only mean one substance and not anything else. But that's not true. Just like in English or any language I know of, words can have more than one meaning, and depending on the context, we figure out what the word means. So here we're seeing a definite proof of that fact. Even Prabhupada states that atma can be mani, mind, or self, depending on the context. So it's the context that tells us what's being said here. How can the mind be the best friend and the worst enemy? What is the mind? Anybody can say, yeah. Yeah, okay, that's one good definition. Yeah, Ganga. Yeah, that too. Does the soul have a mind? Yes. How is it related to that thing that we were just describing? Yes, yeah. So we can function quite well. In fact, we function much better without the false ego. And for that matter, we say that the subtle body or linga sharira is made of ahankara, manas, and buddhi, or we say usually false ego, mind, and intelligence. But actually, it's false ego, false mind, and false intelligence, because the soul also has a mind and it also has intelligence. The difference in the soul is that the intelligence and mind and ego of the soul are not separatable. They are parts, but they can't be screwed off like a light bulb can be taken out of a light socket. In the subtle body, we know that the mind, intelligence, and false ego carry the self from one lifetime to another. So what kind of life does the linga sharira or the subtle body carry us into at death? That's the question. What kind of life? It depends on what we're thinking. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajante ante kalevaram. What we're thinking about at the time of death. And we generally get the impression that at the time of death, we kind of do a summary of our entire life, and whatever was dear to us during life naturally comes up at the time of death. And because it does, this moves us into another body. In another body, we're in a different circumstance. We don't have the same set of senses that we had in the previous body. And we forget, in a general rule, what we did in the previous lifetime. However, the super soul reminds us of what desires we had in the previous lifetime. So we had some desires, and as we're reading today in Bhagavatam, that these desires are never satisfied, material desires. So we die with a whole fruit basket of all kinds of material desires that weren't satisfied. And then we plummet into a new body, a new circumstance, and for a while, as one of these things, little guys, little girls, we don't remember about the past lifetime and our senses don't work. But at a certain point, the super soul reminds us, don't you remember in your last lifetime you wanted to be whatever it was? You wanted to be very powerful. You wanted to experience the world. You wanted to have a lot of money. You wanted to be a well-known personality. You wanted these things, don't you remember? And we think, yeah, that's right. I wanted to do those things. We lose the details, but we carry the desire. And of course, we carry the karma from one lifetime to another. So this is the mind, and it can be our best friend, our worst enemy. So what the mind focuses on is very crucial. And right away, if we start thinking about the mind, we realize that we are not the mind. This is something that most people in the Western world would never ever imagine. If I came into a regular room full of people who weren't devotees and I said, do you know you're not the mind? Most people would, you know, their thought balloon would be a big question mark in the middle of the thought balloon. What is that supposed to mean? You're not the mind. We are the mind. We're thinking, so therefore we are the mind. But if I tell you not to think about a pink elephant for the next half hour, immediately your mind will try to think of a pink elephant. Or if I tell a lot of people a variety of different things, the mind will refuse to follow. So if the mind is not under our control, then obviously we're not the mind. If we were the mind, it would be perfectly under our control because we and it would be the same thing. But obviously, our mind has a mind of its own, as they say. So our mind is our past conditioning for lifetimes and lifetimes. We have thought certain things. We've acted in certain ways. And that's why we see that people are so patterned. Someone gets angry easy. Someone else is very shy. Someone else is very self-righteous. Someone else is very selfish. Someone else is very magnanimous. We have patterned these kinds of behavior. And it's easy for us to see these really deep behavior patterns in other people. But when we see them in ourselves, we aren't able to evaluate them the same way. So we are very much about going in a certain direction. But here it's saying the mind is the best friend. So what should we do with the mind? Smartavya satatam vishnor vishmartavya najatu chit sarva smartavya satatam vishnor vishmartavya najatu chit sarva vidi nisedyasyur etayor eva kinkara. That's the whole verse. That's actually, one should always remember Krishna. One should never forget Krishna. And on these two principles hang all the rules of the Vedic injunctions. These two things, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Of course, that isn't so easy. always remembering Krishna. So we have devotional service, which is our training wheels, to try to develop that attitude of always remembering Krishna. That way at the time of death, we will not tend to be orbiting some group of material desires and therefore wind up in another material body somewhere else in the material world to do the whole thing all over again. So this is also interesting because whatever we think about, we become like that thing. If we're always thinking about sense gratification, we become completely disturbed by sense gratification because the material world is never a nice, even flow of sense gratification. There's always some fly in the ointment, some way that things get messed up. And then we become angry, we become frustrated. We never get a clear shot at sense gratification over a long length of time. There's always something interrupting it, or we get tired of it, we want to move on to something else, and so we're always struggling. And therefore we're always dissatisfied. And we see that in countries where people so-called have the most opulence, most things and resources at their disposal, generally people are the most dissatisfied. In countries where basically there are no options, people are forced to do something, oftentimes they're not as dissatisfied. They've done scientific studies on these things. And we see that if we have a negative thing that the mind focuses on, it will eventually drag us down. And this brings me to another very important thing. Later in the same, this comes from, by the way, the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Later on, Arjuna says, Chanchalam himana krishna pramati balavadridham tasyaham nigraham manye vayoriva suduskaram. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very difficult to control. I think it's more difficult to control the mind than the raging wind. This is what Arjuna is saying. That the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very difficult. I've certainly had that experience. I don't know about anybody else. But the minute you try to get the mind to do something, immediately the mind rebels. And so it's a constant struggle. What happens if we don't struggle? The mind pushes us in all kinds of unfortunate directions. So we have to always work at the mind. I think of the mind like a disc jockey. These days, you know, a lot of places that are popular, people go to clubs and so on and so forth. There's a person, they've got a turntable. Sometimes they use actual vinyl records, but these days it's all done digitally now. You can do this and that and the other, play one song and then another. And so sometimes in a radio station or at one of these places, there's the jockey. He's playing what music everybody's hearing. So the mind is doing the same thing. One time when I was living in New Zealand, there was a devotee, and he ran a radio station, and they asked me to come and speak. So I'd never been in a radio station before. But it works like that. At that time, that was, you know, gosh, that must have been 12 years ago or something like that. The way they do it is that the person, he speaks a little bit, but mostly what he's doing is he's got a bunch of, at that time they used cassettes. I'm sure they're way beyond that nowadays with all the stuff that's digital, but they used cassettes. And whether it was a commercial or a song or whatever it was, he was just plugging something into a slot and then it would play. And of course, it's pre-recorded material, so every time you play it, it's exactly the same. You plug it in and it plays, you plug it in and it plays, you plug it in and it plays. And so that's the way our mind is too. If you notice what goes through the circuits, oftentimes we loop things. We think of something, and then we think of it exactly the same way, like a disc jockey. But sometimes if you sit back, you can watch yourself go over the same loop over and over and over again. Now, the danger here is if it's a negative loop, and oftentimes they are, you will be gradually increasing the emotional potential in a negative situation. We play over in our head something that happened that caused us anger. That person said something. It bothered me. And then a few minutes later, we're thinking about it again. That person said something. It bothered me. Then again, we're thinking about that person said something. It bothered me. And then something happens and distracts us for hours and hours. And when we settle down again, we think, oh yeah, that person said something. And it bothered me. And this goes over. And each time, it's almost identical. The words that we use in the mind, it says the same thing over and over again. Nothing new. We're not coming up with a new idea. We're not thinking how to resolve the issue. We're not thinking, well, maybe I said something or who cares or anything like that. We're just mulling over the issue again and again. And each time there's an emotional rise, we become more committed, we become more disturbed by it. And if we don't catch ourselves doing this, this leads to some kind of gross activity. We become angry, we become violent, we say something we later on wish we had never said. And so this is the disc jockey of the mind, repeating the same thing over and over again in a negative way. Sometimes it's not anger. Sometimes it's someone said something that hurt me. So now I'm going to play it over. I was hurt this way. And each time we feel a little more depressed. Each time we feel a little more something or another. Sometimes it may be I did something very stupid. I feel very embarrassed. I can't face anyone anymore. We play that over and over and over. Each time the emotional content goes up. So we should be thinking about Krishna. But instead, we're letting these kind of things rumble around in our consciousness. Sometimes you can catch yourself. Even if you know that this is happening, it happens anyways. I catch myself doing these things all the time. And the right thing to do is to take the tape and just pull it out of the socket. Put the Krishna tape back in. Or something else. And I found that another thing that really helps a lot is to genuinely pray for people. That we find that most of the time all of us have some aspects of our, you know, character, our devotional progress. It's very wonderful. And then we have things about us that are really hard for other people to take. We have not worked out some of the rough edges yet. There was one time that I heard an example from the Buddhist philosophy that in Korea, the way that they wash potatoes is they get a big tub. And they fill the tub full of water, and they put all the potatoes in the tub, and then they just move the tub around, and the potatoes bump around, and they knock the dirt off one another. So I'll leave it to you to understand how this analogy works in a practical way in devotional service. But oftentimes, that's what I feel like. And so we are trying to recognize that these things are going on in our devotional life, and just as we are knocking the dirt off someone else, they're knocking the dirt off us. And oftentimes, the simple thing is to think, oh, Prabhu, you are doing this. Wouldn't it be better if you didn't do that? And 99 times out of 100, if you say that, absolutely nothing will happen. Why is that? Well, we're not open to those kind of suggestions, or we know, or it's not a simple thing of just knowledge making all the difference. We have a behavior issue. And we have to go much deeper than that. Even sometimes people know that they're doing something they shouldn't do or shouldn't be thinking or shouldn't be acting in a certain way. But it's not so easy. Just like a switch, you go and you turn something, okay, it'll be different from now on. It's not that easy. So what to do next? Well, one thing we could do is harp on the issue, which usually also doesn't help. As a matter of fact, it makes things usually worse. And for that matter, we may not be aware of something. Some other issue that's hidden from our view. So the best thing to do is to pray to the Supreme Lord for the benefit of others. Of course, this excludes all those in management who have a free passport to hell. It's always easy in management to make all kinds of offenses because you have to call shots. You can't simply just imagine that everybody will be purified. You have to draw some lines somewhere. And that definitely leaves you as a moving target and makes it easy to make offenses and so on and so forth. But in the general rule, we're not called to make these decisions, those of us who are not in management much. And it's easier to appreciate the fact that just as people are putting up with us, we have to put up with things that they have, and we can pray for their benefit. And we may not even know what that is. Oftentimes, I find myself realizing that there's a problem somewhere with someone or some group of people, and I can't even sort it out. I don't know where it came from or what the real bottom line is. And you know, even courtrooms don't figure things out oftentimes, and they have all kinds of facilities. So we just pray to the Supreme Lord for the benefit of others. And I find that this mentality of trying to genuinely want the best for other people, even if you don't know what it is, you know that Krishna knows what it is. You may not, but Krishna knows what it is. And you are just, instead of looping one of these things that causes you to be angry or just sometimes irked at someone's quirks, you just find something that someone does. It's not even necessarily hugely negative or it's a big rasa that's gone on for years and years, but something someone does just bothers you for some reason. So instead of playing the loop over and over again, you just pray for their benefit. And because you're praying for their benefit, it puts you in a very compassionate mood. Even if you have no compassion, like I don't, you can become a little bit compassionate by thinking that way and praying that way. And then over time, you will also begin to feel a positive sense towards people around you. And believe me, living in community is not easy. You all know that. I know that. And the problem is the Krishna Conscious Movement is a community thing. If you don't want to be in a community, I hate to break it to you, but you joined the wrong movement. You never see Krishna by himself. There's no such thing as devotees in isolation. We always live in groups. And if we live in groups, that means clashes. Prabhupada said sometimes in the kitchen there are different utensils and they bang against one another. That's how he used to describe it. Kitchen utensils banging against one another. So we have different views, different ideas, different ways of doing things, different ideas of what's important. But somehow or other, we're living in community and we're trying to make the best of it. And we're trying to harmonize some way or another. Yes, sometimes issues do have to finally be decided in a black or white way. It has to be this or that, not somewhere in between. And that can be done. But in many cases, we can learn how to live with those who don't have the same idea as we do. And if you stop and think about it, what is the possibility that two people on planet Earth have the same idea about everything? The possibility is zero. So no matter who your friends are, or who your enemies are for that matter, we find that no one shares our opinion about everything on every point. And similarly, nobody disagrees with us about everything on every point. So we're constantly living with people who some accept some of the things we accept and don't accept other things that we accept. So preaching yourself this way is good as well. But the most important thing is always thinking of Krishna. So we're thinking of Krishna, using the mind in this way. Particularly, we're trying to think of Krishna positively by doing service for him. And by serving the Vaishnavas, great service is done. We all came to this movement by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. And we are trying to also show our affection to them. We are trying to learn. If we can't appreciate and love other Vaishnavas, what hope have we ever got of appreciating and loving the Supreme Lord? It's easier to learn those who we can relate to. The Supreme Lord is more distant because we have removed ourselves from the Supreme Lord so long ago when we left the spiritual world. And now we are trying to once again make that connection. All the Vaishnavas each have something to offer. And the more we can appreciate them and encourage them, the better we are. And the more we can learn how to genuinely show our desire and appreciation for them, the more that our society becomes more of a harmonious society. Now, of course, I'm speaking to you all, but you know, by no means do I consider myself an expert in these things. I certainly am one of the worst in many of these categories, but I know this is the way I should go, and this is why I'm thinking about these things. Knowing where you should go and being there, two different things, but at least we're heading in the right direction. We know which direction to head, not in the wrong direction. So the mind is our best friend or the worst enemy? And what about the fact that it is chanchalam, but it's flickering, it's disturbed? What about that? Well, Krishna explains. Yes, the mind is very difficult to control. Lord Krishna said, here is in Sanskrit, Sri Bhagavanavacha, Asamshayam Mahabaho Mano Durnigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tukanteya Vairagena Chagrihyate. Lord Sri Krishna said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it's undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible. How? By suitable practice and detachment. Abhyasena, that's by practice, and vairagena, by detachment. So that's what we're doing by devotional service. We are doing activities which will gradually bring the mind under control. If we chant Hare Krishna, that's the most important thing. That's the real Dickens, trying to focus the mind when we're chanting Hare Krishna. If we can do that, then that's 90% of the battle won. If we can, even if we can't do it, if we're struggling to do it, that's 90% of the battle won, this chanting process. Because the chanting, the whole point of it is to control the mind. And of course, the mind will scream like anything when we're trying to chant. The mind has to do something to distract us. So we keep bringing the mind back. And I heard something the other day by a devotee, Yajna Purusha, who's the organizer of the Bhakti Center in Manhattan. He mentioned that he heard when he was in Germany that a devotee had once asked Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, how do we actually chant Hare Krishna very nicely? What's the method? And Prabhupada said, this is simple. Just try to hear yourself chanting sincerely. So, two things there. Hear yourself and then chanting sincerely. We are trying to hear our own sound of our voice, and it's supposed to be chanting sincerely. We struggle to do that as much as we can do that. Whenever we see that we're drifted miles away, we just come back. And more the mind will be controlled, and we will be able to be aware when our crazy disc jockey is playing something that they shouldn't be playing. We'll pull it out, and we'll substitute the Krishna mantra or something else in place of it. And we can develop a set of prayers for the benefit of other people. If we're not praying for the people that we work with every day, who is? What are we here for? We're supposed to care about one another. And if you're like me, you don't have any emotions at all. But you try to care for one another, at least in theory. So you try to do the best thing for other people by praying for their benefit, for their welfare. So these things can certainly help. So I'll stop here. Give us a few moments if there are any questions. Yeah, I'm going to write.
A lot of the principles that you proposed, although true, absolutely true and well taken, are there are so many seminar groups that also propose these different things. So if somebody from a seminar group, if you met somebody from a seminar group and they agreed with you about all these different principles of detaching, how would you what would you say to them to convince them that actually the method for this is Krishna consciousness? Or what? How would you differentiate Krishna consciousness from other principles offered by seminar groups?
Well, there's a difference between just, you know, positive thinking. I've never experienced one of these seminar groups that talks on this particular issue, so I'm not sure what angle they're coming from, whether they're just talking about being positive to other people, or whether they have some kind of sense of the great oneness, something more, you know, new agey, or whether they actually address the issue of God in the whole concept. But that's one of the essential things. We can't really control the mind for any length of time unless God is in the equation somewhere. We can have positive attitudes. We can understand that there's a great something beyond. But until we actually can pin it down, maybe we don't know exactly what Krishna looks like, but if we have a sense that there's a God and we're praying to that God to help us and to help others, then yes, then the mind can be controlled. But if that's missing, then the mind will only be partially controlled and to a certain extent, only part of the time. Even when we do know that, it's still, the mind is an uphill battle. And that's the real place where the rubber meets the road for devotional service. How much are we trying to fight that battle to keep the mind in? So I'm not sure if that answers your question, and I don't have enough information to answer it any more clearly than that. You have a question?
If you're chanting, but you still got a lot of like material desires, you're still kind of not even like completely following, you know, will you lose attachment for those desires?
Yeah.
After time, but because there's also the offenses, they say that you should that you should avoid. So if you have like a lot of those offenses while you're chanting, and you're committing a lot of those offenses, do you just disregard that? I mean, I guess you got to.
That's an excellent question, as they say in Bhagavatam. The reason it's an excellent question is most people are confused by that issue. We say that there's the six offenses to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. Now, what does that really mean? In a nutshell, this could be a 45-minute discussion, but in a nutshell, when we come to devotional service, there's no question of coming to devotional service on the pure platform. We start devotional service on the mixed platform, which means we are serving Krishna, but we're also got a lot of material desires, and we also have a lot of bad habits. And it's impossible to just junk all those bad habits all at once. If we had to do it that way, we'd all be out of luck. None of us would have ever gotten off the launching pad. So that means we start Krishna consciousness as much as we can, to the best we can. And if we're sincere about trying to make progress, we'll be moved forward day by day. And we're not making that offense. That offense is for what I call professional sinners, people who have no desire to give up sin, but they've just heard that chanting Krishna's name gets rid of the karma. All they're interested in is getting rid of the karma. They're not interested in changing their life. If you're progressively trying to change your life, even if it's a little bit, then you're not in that category. And we can't expect, 100% victory over our past conditioning right away. I mean, it does happen. It's not that it's impossible. But Prabhupada said many times, rarely does it happen that way. For the most of us, it's a gradual process. We take up Krishna consciousness, and yes, it's true. Over time, we lose those material desires that drag us to this material world and are the hardest for us. I've seen it happen even in my own life. Over time, many of the things that one time had such a strong gravity over my consciousness are no longer felt the same way. They gradually. That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. We read the Goswami literatures, especially Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He mentions nine stages of devotional purification. So we go from doing what's right because we know it's the right thing at least theoretically, even though we're attracted to what's wrong and we're not attracted to what's right. We go from that stage when we get up through, you know, Nishta, Ruchi, Atasakti, we go up to the higher stages. We get to the stage where we honestly are attracted to what's right and we're not even interested in what's wrong. That means that the consciousness has been really scrubbed down, heavy duty, with all kinds of cleansers. And now we don't even find ourselves attracted to the wrong course of action. It's not that we're thinking about it and forcing it out of our life. We're not even attracted to it. So yes, that will happen. And never fear that we are too offensive to take the medicine of chanting the holy name. The only thing, and even they make progress, the people who are taking the name and just getting rid of the sin. Of course, it's not much progress. But if we're struggling against our past conditioning and we're trying to chant the holy name, we're not making that offense. Yes, we are not perfect and we still have material desires, but we're making solid progress. So don't ever think that way, because that way will certainly stunt. You can come, and I think devotees do sometimes come to this feeling, well, I'm doing so many things wrong and halfway that I might as well just give up the process. That's certainly the worst realization you could possibly come to. It's completely maya. It has no basis in our philosophy. No matter how slow your progress is, if you just continue, Krishna will eventually perfect you. All right, so I guess that's our time. I don't know what happens here if you go over time. Somebody comes with a big hook or you get beat with shoes or whatever. What's your question? We'll take this last question.
It's very short. Can you be a good devotee or can be considered a good devotee without being a good person?
Depends on what you mean by a good person.
Someone that it's... I mean, we all know what is a good person. It's like a person that follows, you know, certain behavior and, you know, behaves in certain ways or respect others. But my question is basically, can you be a good devotee without being a good person? You know, what we consider a good person, being a good person is like... Yeah, basically like in the society, I mean, like.
Well, that question has also a kind of a simple answer. There's a book called the Harinam Chintamani, written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In the Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is listing the 10 offenses and explaining how they work. And the first offense is to blaspheme devotees who dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. That's the first offense. So the question comes, well, what's a devotee? If I blaspheme someone and they're not a devotee, then I'm not making that offense. If I'm blaspheming someone and they are a devotee, I'm making that offense. So the question is, and what's a devotee? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, he talks about something called tatastha lakshana and swarupa lakshana. Tatastha lakshana is incidental qualities, and swarupa lakshana is the main quality, right? So water, its main quality is wetness. Is there any possibility of water without wetness? No. Is there any possibility of sugar without sweetness? Is there any possibility of chilies without hotness? That's the main quality. What's a tangential quantity or a tatastha lakshana? It's something that's incidental, like water may have some blue dye in it. It's blue, but water in general isn't, and it's not something that has anything to do with the water. It's just a quality that happens to be there. So then the next question that leads us forward to the idea of there are many qualities that devotees possess. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur begins to list them. There's many, many, many qualities. Out of all those qualities, there's one that's the swarupa lakshana, the deciding quality, and all the rest are tatastha lakshanas. Which quality do you think is the deciding quality that makes a person a devotee or not a devotee? No. It's a good guess, but that's not it. No. Also a good one. That's close. We need a little more than that. What's that? No. That's not it. No. What's that? Sincerity? No. Good. Yeah? No. The question is, there are many qualities that devotees possess. We see them listed in scripture. And in the Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, all the qualities are tatastha lakshana, incidental, except for one, which is the deciding quality. No. What's that? Yeah, that's close enough that I'm going to take that. What it is that if one has one-pointed faith in the Supreme Lord, that is the mark of a devotee. All the others may or may not be there. So we are seeing that, you know, what is that verse? Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvaya gunas tatra samasate sarav harava bhaktasya kuto mahad gunan mano retena sati davato bahi. That verse is saying that all the good qualities of demigods manifest in the body of one who is a devotee of the Supreme Lord. However, one who is not a devotee of the Lord has no good qualities, even if he is adept at mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives. Such a person must be led by his own material mano retainer, the chariot of the mind, and must be engaged in the service of the Lord's external energy. So, all the good qualities will eventually be added to the devotee if he has this main quality. He's completely sure that only Krishna can help me. Whatever it is that's wrong, Krishna can help me. That's my feeling, that's my understanding, that's how I live. All the others may be there, they may not be there. Because over time, we develop all the qualities of the demigods. But otherwise, we may show these good qualities in society. However, in time, those good qualities will be overturned. Because we go through life, we have material desires, and in time those desires will shift as gradually we move from lifetime to lifetime. We may have a good quality in one lifetime, and we may lose that in a future lifetime. So in this sense, that's what that verse is suggesting, that those who are not, you know, dedicated to the Supreme Lord have no good qualities. Yes, they do have qualities that we can appreciate. And it's not that one has to necessarily only be a Krishna devotee to have an appreciation for God. One can be sold out to God in some other religion. It works the same way. So therefore, if a person is actually sold out to God, eventually they will develop all the good qualities. Eventually they will develop it. If they're not, they may have good qualities for a time, and then over the lifetimes those may change. All right. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavad Gita.